So very happy to be back here in Gainesville with all of the wonderful devotees here. Just returned 1 week ago from visit to Sridhar Mayapur, and fortunate to be there at the time when they had Maha Abhishek of the Panchatattva. I think Rukmini was also there at that time, and my wife was there. Very wonderful thing. Have you seen the videos of that online?
Yes,
it's
so nice.
Yeah, it's quite an amazing experience. Lord Chaitanya just, when they open the curtain, the deities are ready for their bath, and Lord Chaitanya's standing there with his arms out like this, and the other deities have their arms spread out like that, and it's like they're inviting, come on, just, you know, serve me. And so all the devotees served, they're like little minions, so many devotees around, you know, putting paste on the deities and doing this and that. Just all over the altar, these little devotees are like doing service. Quite an amazing experience. And then the wonderful colors of the liquids, green and raspberry, and it's just quite amazing. So Every 5 years they do this. So you can mark your calendar now. 2019, next Maha Abhishek. And if we're all very fortunate, that'll also be the year when they open the new temple that is the Temple of the Vedic Planetarium, which is being constructed there. We also had the opportunity to go on a tour of the superstructure of that building. Quite an amazing facility. I think the temple room is 1 or 2 acres in size. So 10,000 devotees at a time should fit in there for kirtan, and that'd be an amazing experience in itself. Kirtan with 10,000 devotees. So if you get the opportunity to go to Sri Mayapur Dham, take it. It's well worth the experience. But to speak of devotees from all over the world, it'd help if you're Russian speaking, because the place is really packed with a lot of devotees from Russia. And if Prabhupada's prediction comes true, which I'm sure it will, he said that when the Chinese become devotees, then they'll really be, it'll be hard to make them devotees, but when they become devotees, they'll be very staunch. And already there's a large contingent of devotees from China there. They had a whole section of the temple room where they would have the class translated every day. They sat neatly in rows just like this. And they had the little ear plugs in the class translated. So I'm sure the Chinese will number greatly. In the past, the Americans used to be quite prominent there, but numbers of Americans are down compared to the other nations of the world. But all are Vaishnavas, and it's a wonderful place to be, so you have the opportunity, don't hesitate, go to Sri Mayapur Dham. Ardoya Dham, it's the place where the Lord shows his mercy. Ardoya means mercy or compassion. Compared to Madhurya, which is a sweetness you find in Vrindavan. Same, but in Mayapur and Vrindavan are the same. But the emphasis in Mayapur is on the mercy the Lord gives to everyone. And so that's part of what we'll be discussing today. We're reading today from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 43. And I must compliment those who developed this syllabus, because I think that the verses chosen for the different subject matters are very appropriate. So I think there was a team of devotees that put together the syllabus. They did a good job. Today's subject matter are the higher stages of bhakti. The higher stages of bhakti were revealed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers, so it's appropriate. Relationships with the Supreme. So chapter 10, text 43, canto 10, chapter 43, text 17. Do you want to read the rather long Sanskrit verses today? Give everybody the tune.
Mallanam ashanirninam naravara strinam smaro murtiman.
Mallanam ashanirninam naravara strinam smaro murtiman.
Gopanam svajano shatam shiti bhujam shasta svapitaro shishu.
Gopanam svajano satam shiti bhujam shasta svapito shishu.
Mirtyur bhojapater virada vidusham tatvam param yoginam.
Mirtyur bhojapater virada vidusham tatvam param yoginam.
Vrishninam paradevate ti vidito rangam gata sagraja.
Vrishninam paradevate vidito rangam gata sagraja.
One more time. Mallanam ashanirninam naravara stri nam smaro murtiman.
Mala nam asanayrinam nirakara stri nam smaro murtiman.
Gopanam svajano shatam shiti bhujam shasta svapittaro shishu.
Gopanam svajano satam shiti bhujam shasta svapitro shishu.
Mirtyur bhojapater virada vidusham tatvam param yoginam.
Mirtyur bhojapater virada vidusham tatvam param yoginam.
Vrishninam paradevate ti vidito rangam gata sagraja.
Vrishninam paradevate ti vidito rangam gata sagraja. Mritur bhojapate varada visam tatva param yoginam.
Vrishninam paradevate ti vidito rangam gata sagraja.
Vrishninam paradevate ti vidito rangam gata sagraja.
Mallanam ashanirninam naravara sri nam smaro murtiman.
Mallanam
Anyone else? Okay. Word meanings. Malanam for the. I'll just read them. It's okay. Okay. Malanam for the wrestlers. Asina, lightning. Nirnam for the males. Naravara, the best of men. Strinam for the women. Smaram, Cupid. Murtiman, incarnate. Gopanam, for the cowherds. Swajana, their relative. Asatam, impious. Shittibujam, for the kings. Shasta, for his parents. Shishur, a child. Mrityu, death. Bhojapate, for the king of the Bhojas. Kamsa, Virat, the totality of material nature. Tatvam, the truth. Param, supreme. Yoginam, for the yogis. Vishninam, for the members of the Vishni dynasty. Para devata, for their worshipful deity. Iti, in these ways. Vidu, sud, angam, the arena. Kata, is entered. Sa, along with Agraja. Translation. The various groups of people in the arena regarded Krishna in different ways when he entered it with his elder brother. The wrestlers saw Krishna as a lightning bolt, the men of Mathura as the best of males, the women as Cupid in person, the coward men as their relative, the impious rulers as a chastiser, his parents as their child, the king of the Bhojas as death, the unintelligent, as the Supreme Lord's universal form, the yogis as the absolute truth, and the Vrishnis as their supreme worshipful deity. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami quotes the following verse, which explains the 10 attitudes toward Krishna described here. Rudro Bhutas Cha Shingaro Hasyam Viro Daya Tata Vaya Nakasta Bibhasta Hasa Santa Sa Prema Bhaktitaka Bhaktika. The 10 different moods: fury perceived by the wrestlers, wonder by the men, conjugal attraction, the women, laughter, the cowards, chivalry, the king's mercy, his parents, terror, Kamsa, ghastliness, the unintelligent, peaceful neutrality, the yogis, and loving devotion, the Vrishnis. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that people like the wrestlers, Kamsa, and the impious rulers perceive Krishna as dangerous, angry, or threatening because they fail to understand the actual position of the personality of Godhead. Actually, Lord Krishna is everyone's friend and well-wisher, but because we rebel against him, he chastises us, and thus we may perceive him as threatening. Krishna, or God, is actually merciful, and when he punishes us, that is also his mercy. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur quotes the following Vedic statement, Raso Vaisa Rasam Hyavevayam Labd. Labdva Dandi Bhavati. He himself is rasa, the taste or mellow of a particular relationship, and certainly one who achieves this rasa becomes anadi, filled with bliss. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7.1. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur quotes a further verse to explain the word rasa. Vyatitya Bhavana Vartma Yas kamat kara bara bu hridi sadvo jale bhadham svadate savraso manta. That which is beyond imagination, heavy with wonder and relished in the heart, shining with goodness, such is known as rasa. As Srila Rupa Goswami elaborately explains in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there are five main rasas: neutrality, servitude, friendship, parental love, and conjugal love. And seven secondary rasas: amazement, humor, chivalry, compassion, fury, fear, and dread. Thus altogether, there are 12 rasas, and the supreme object of them all is Sri Krishna himself. In other words, our love and affection are actually meant for Sri Krishna. Unfortunately, out of ignorance, we stubbornly try to squeeze happiness and love out of material relationships, which are not directly connected to Krishna, and thus life becomes a constant frustration. The solution is simple: surrender to Krishna, love Krishna, love Krishna's devotees, and be happy forever. Om Gyanata Maranda Shagan Anjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. That's a nice last sentence, wasn't it? Surrender to Krishna, love Krishna, love Krishna's devotees, and be happy forever. It's just that easy, actually, really. It's just that easy, because ultimately this process of bhakti yoga is the highest. I was just listening to a lecture this morning on Chaitanya Leela given by His Holiness Bhanu Swami, one of my favorite devotees. And he was explaining how, he was reading a verse about how prior to the advent of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the devotees would gather at the house of Advaitacharya, and they would study various scriptures, bhakti scriptures, and it mentions specifically Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And so Bhanu Maharaj was explaining why these two scriptures are actually the highest, today's subject matter, higher stages of bhakti. Why are the bhakti scriptures and the bhakti path considered the highest? Higher than what? I guess we would start with higher than yoga, jnana, karma. Higher than all these things is bhakti. We tend to think of bhakti as, because it's easy, therefore it must not be the highest. But it's an easy path, simply giving our heart to Krishna. As I said, that's all we need to do, give our heart to Krishna. But when it's compared to like the trials that one goes through in karma, for instance, karma involves fruitive activities and the performance of Vedic ritualistic sacrifices, great sacrifices at great expense and great endeavor. They have to be perfectly done to get the right result. A very troublesome process to perform. So sometimes, again, people think, well, it's hard, so therefore it must be better. But no. Bhakti gives a superior result. Bhakti gives eternal things. That's what the verse says here, be happy forever. That's what the result of loving Krishna is, loving Krishna's devotees, is to be happy forever. It gives eternal results, whereas karma gives temporary results, temporary benefits. So in that sense, bhakti is higher. Jnana also. Jnana. By studying the shastras, applying our intelligence, studying the intricacies of Sanskrit, Prabhupada says it takes 12 years to master the Sanskrit language. So imagine if, you know, we have Krishna House here and we tell people on the campus, you know, okay, you can come, and you have to, our process is jnana, so you have to spend 12 years just to master the language. Then you can get to the subject matter. I mean, how many people are going to be into that in Kali Yuga? I mean, not very many. And what's the result of jnana? Who knows what the result of jnana is? What's the goal of the jnanis?
Liberation.
Liberation. The impersonal Brahman. the goal of spending 12 years studying Sanskrit, then how many years studying all the Shastras is just to like nothingness. Doesn't sound very attractive. And also it's temporary. Aruya Kutschena Param Param Pada. Because our nature is personal, if we achieve an impersonal goal, after some time, no matter whether there's bliss there or not, we're going to become dissatisfied and we're going to look for activity. Therefore, Prabhupada pointed out to us different impersonalist paths that are in India today even existing. And how those that follow those paths, after some time, they come back into the world of men and take up welfare activities, like hospitals and things like that. It doesn't give them a permanent seat. So karma, jnana, yoga. Yoga can give you great mystic powers. Not everyone can achieve those kind of powers, especially with the type of yoga that's done widely around the world today. But the path is a path that can yield great power. Sometimes you even see today these yogis come around. I remember years ago in Potomac Temple, there was one Indian man, he was coming to the temple, and he was a yogi, he had some powers. And so on the Sunday feast sometime, he would show off his powers. He was so strong, he could like pull a car or something. He did some, you know, feats of strength like that. And, but ultimately, even those kind of things, the powers we obtain from yoga, are temporary and don't satisfy the heart. So when we talk about the process of bhakti yoga, we say it's the highest stage because it satisfies the self. Haitikiya pratiyata yayatma supersediti. The beginning of the Bhagavatam, which is the literature studied by Advaitacharya and the devotees there anticipating the descent of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srimad Bhagavatam says that this is completely satisfying to the self. Completely satisfying. That's a concept that we can barely relate to because we're so dissatisfied with everything we experience. We don't know what it's like to be completely satisfied. But we see in the lives of the great devotees what that means. It means a steadiness, a peacefulness that lasts and is not disturbed by whatever happens in this material world. And so that's what bhakti gives us, this type of satisfaction. And this verse today enters us into the subject of rasa, or the satisfaction, the nature of the satisfaction that one feels by executing devotional service or bhakti yoga. And this verse is a very special lila that's being described here. It's special just like the Govardhan lila is special. These two lilas, Krishna entering the wrestling arena in Mathura, and Krishna lifting Govardhan hill and staying there with the residents of Vrindavan for 7 days continuously, they have something in common. And I'm wondering, does anybody know what things these two leaders have in common that make them very special? Anybody have any idea? Yeah.
No, I'm just going to guess that everyone had the chance to just see Krishna in the center, and everyone was perceiving him in different ways, and Krishna was reciprocating with everyone in different ways.
Exactly. Very good. That's the special thing about this lila, is that all the different types of relationships people have with Krishna were experienced in one place at the same time by all the different people there with all their different relationships. When Krishna was in Vrindavan and he lifted Govardhan Hill, all the residents of Vrindavan came underneath. The cows came underneath. The cowherd boys came underneath, the gopis came underneath, his parents and elders came underneath the hill. Everyone was there, and they were all looking at Krishna in one place at one time for a week. and experiencing their individual relationships. Generally, during Krishna's pastimes, he's with his mother and father at home in the morning, at night in the morning. And that relationship, the parental love, is predominant. And then he goes out to the pasturing grounds. And so what's prominent there in the pasturing grounds? His relationship with the cowherd boys is there. And then he sneaks away to meet the gopis, and what's prominent there? The conjugal relationship with the Lord. So we find that in general, Krishna is in a different places and with the devotees there experiences a certain type of rasa. But in the Govardhan Leela, they were all there under the hill and they were all experiencing their individual relationships with Krishna at the same time in one place. That's special. And that same thing is repeated here when Krishna enters the wrestling arena. All kinds of different people are there, his devotees and those who aren't his devotees in this case. And all of them experienced, as described in this verse, different relationships with Krishna at the same time. So that's why this Leela is very, very special. And it's special because of what is the supreme feature of Krishna. Krishna being all-powerful has different potencies and energies. We know that, but what's supreme among them all? What's supreme among them all? Someone saying?
His affection for his devotees.
Yeah, his affection for his devotees is his supreme feature. Now, that feature is actually what God is like. You know, you're serving Krishna lunch, you're interacting with the devotees, distributing books, you may, and you start talking about God to somebody. If you're fortunate, and that person is fortunate, they may ask you, well, let me ask you a confidential question. What is God actually like? What kind of person is he? And so, studying Krishna consciousness, studying bhakti yoga here at Krishna House, we should be able to answer that question. What is God actually like? Is he, for instance, full of majesty and authority? Is God full of majesty and authority? Can anybody say? Yes. But how does that compare to him being the friend and well-wisher of everyone? Majesty and authority and being the friend and well-wisher. There's an example given how these things are different by Srila Prabhupada. I'll just read it here because it's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The judge, he says, Srila Prabhupada explained this by comparing Lord Narayan to a high court judge. The judge is a majestic and powerful figure in the courtroom, but only in the privacy of his own home do we see the expression of his full personality. At home, the judge reveals his intimate and sweet nature. With his parents, he is obedient and faithful. With his friends, he is confidential and joyful. And with his spouse, he is a passionate lover. So this majestic and authority conception of God is by its nature a lesser understanding of who God is. So if someone asks you, well, who is God? What is he actually like? You could rightfully answer, he's full of majesty and authority. He creates this world. He destroys this world. He sends one to heaven. He gives one the results of his activities. He takes away the authority of those who act against him. Certainly that is God, but that's not the highest feature of God. A more personal understanding of his nature is who the person actually is. When we say God is personal, it's not limited to the fact that as Mahavishnu, he lies down as a person and universes come from the pores of his body. Yes, that's a personal understanding of creation, but the personal feature of the sweet, intimate nature of the Lord, that is what we really want to understand if we want to know what he's like. There's another example here about the creation role of God. Creation reveals his majesty and power, but at home in Vrindavan, the fullness of his wonderful sweet personality blossoms. Therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami addresses Vrindavan Krishna as Akila Rasam Mrita Murti and singles him out as the object of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So Akila Rasamrita Murti, the embodiment of all loving relationships, that's the supreme feature of God. That's the supreme feature of God. And so when we see these pastimes like Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill and Krishna entering the arena here, then we get a glimpse at who is God and what he's actually like. The purport makes a very interesting point here where it talks about that Krishna is everyone's friend and well-wisher. But because we rebel against him, he chastises us, and thus we perceive him as threatening. How many of us, or how many of the people we interact with, see God differently? They see him as the chastiser. And why do they see him that way? Well, we get a little glimpse of it ourselves in our own relationships here in this world. We might, for instance, see the temple commander or the temple president as, you know, someone chastising because, you know, we're sleeping, we don't want to do our service. And so as soon as we see that person, we think, oh, this person's so mean and cruel. And we characterize him and we actually start seeing him in that light. You know, Kalakanta is walking around with a stick in his hand. You know, that's who Kalakanta is. But no, that's based on our own laziness, our own desire to rebel, and therefore we see someone as threatening. Not just temple president, but that may manifest in any kind of relationship. And certainly it manifests in how we perceive God. Those who want to turn against God, say like the asuras we read about in Krishna's pastimes, they don't accept Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Even they come to Vrindavan and they see him there where he exhibits this loving relationship with all his devotees. They see him as something different. But that's based on their own mentality. So, again, we have to see God as he is, not as we would create him. And he reveals himself as he is in Vrindavan and in Mayapur. I mentioned Mayapur, Adoya Dham, the place of great compassion and mercy. There, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has appeared to present God to us as he really is, what he's really like. He's the friend and well-wisher of everyone. Even if we see him as a chastiser, he still gives mercy to us when he chastises us. What happened to all the soldiers, the belligerent soldiers who fought against Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? What happened to them when they got killed? They got liberation. I mean, is that something? Freedom, liberation, meaning freedom from all material suffering. Is that something you give somebody that's trying to kill you? But that's what Krishna does, because ultimately he is our friend and well-wisher. And we really should embrace this idea, this understanding about Krishna, that he's our friend and well-wisher. Because if we do that, then our perception of the Supreme Lord will be different, and our ability to approach him with love will be different as well. And so that's what we really need to do, approach him with love. And when we do that, then we can enjoy some of the relationships that are mentioned in this verse today. And I want to give you an example about how we can enter into these relationships deeper by the mercy of the previous acharyas. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that the way the devotees relish Krishna is by hearing about him and talking about him. You know that verse in the 10th chapter? Puriyanta parasram tu santi cha ramanti cha. Yes. Devotees, the way they enjoy rasa with Krishna is by talking about him and hearing about him. And when devotees do that, then they mix their own realizations with the truth of Krishna so that we get a deeper understanding of Krishna. And there's an example of this right in this verse today. Now, I've read this translation that I read many times, and it says things like, the wrestler saw Krishna as a lightning bolt, the men of Mathura as the best of males. I mean, what does that mean? The men of Mathura as the best of males, or the wrestlers as a lightning bolt. We get it in the purport here. There's a verse quoted of Srila Sridhar Swami, one of the original commentators on Bhagavatam, and he helps us understand what these things mean so that we can relish them more. For instance, he says that the wrestler saw Krishna as a lightning bolt. Well, he adds that what was being perceived, the mood that was being perceived by the wrestlers was fury. Now, to me, a lightning bolt means one thing, but if you add fury to it, it gives a deeper, you know, understanding of the emotion being experienced by the wrestlers. Fury. If you're wrestling with somebody and they exhibit fury, pretty soon you're going to be on your back on the mat and being dragged around and pushed around because they furiously are all over you, you know, and you have no chance. You're completely suffocated by actions in that regard. So that understanding of fury enlightens Thunderbolt. Thunderbolt's strong and powerful, yes, but fury means it's like really all over you. And it's really got you so that causes more fear there. Now, he says here, Sridhar Swami says that the men of Mathura saw Krishna as the best of males. And so he says wonder. That was experienced as wonder. Now, we experience that sometimes when we meet powerful people in this world. You know, if we met President Obama or something like that, there's a certain awe, you know, that, wow, this person has such power at their disposal. Or we even see like a very beautiful, handsome man. You know, we're like sort of in awe at that. So this experience of wonder, at least for me, gives a deeper understanding of what it means for the best of males. Cupid is corresponding with conjugal attraction. And this is an interesting one. The cowherd men, the verse says, the cowherd men saw him as their relative. But in the verse, it said that laughter is given for that, the way they saw him. Now, when you're in your family setting, everything, laughter, you know, is a part of the intimate relationship that goes on. And so what does it mean to be the relative of somebody that you can relax and have a jovial time with and experience laughter? So I thought that really was one that explained the relationship being experienced more. And I think there was one other one here. Oh, parents. Yes, his parents saw him as the child, their child. And Sridhar Swami says that was experienced was mercy. Because what's the relationship between a parent and a child? It's a very merciful one, of a compassionate one, one taking care of them and nourishing them. And so he says mercy. So, I mean, this is an example of how the acharyas, they churn the pastimes, churn the understanding so that we can enter into these more emotional type of relationships with Krishna. And so Sridhar Swami has contributed that. Now, finally, in the purport here today, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur talks about rasa. And I want to give you a definition of rasa, because sometimes the elements of rasa, well, if we understand the elements of rasa, it helps us experience it a little bit more. So our attraction to Krishna in one of these types of relationships, friendship, servitude, parental, conjugal, the attraction is actually called rati. Rati, the word is there. We sing in the song Guru Puja, Shri Guru Charana Rati, attraction for your lotus feet. So rati is the attraction. So we experience an attraction for Krishna in different ways, one of these primary five ways. And then there are various things which mix with that attraction that transform it into rasa. In other words, the situation. Like when Krishna is with the cowherd boys and they go out into the field and herding the cows, we find descriptions of the beauty of the forest and how the cows are grazing, moving here and there, and how they were playing different games. So activities, the setting, all these things mix with the rati or attraction to form rasa. So when we talk about, what is the fraternal rasa? Cowherd boys? Sakya. When we talk about sakya rasa, it means the attraction of a friend in the setting that is conducive to heightening that attraction. That's rasa. So like for the gopis, then what would it be for the gopis? Can Krishna experience the madhurya rasa with the gopis in the presence of Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj? No, because it's a different relationship. It sort of dampens the free love that Krishna has with the gopis. So that's experienced at night in the moonlit forest of Vrindavan, different places. And so those things stimulate that type of an attraction to make madhurya rasa. Similarly, the parental relationship between Krishna and Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj is experienced at home, where Krishna does things like put his father's slippers on his head and carries them to him, things like that. And so it's the type of attraction or rati mixed with the different circumstances and stimuluses which create rasa. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives a very nice definition here of what rasa means. He says, that which is beyond imagination, heavy with wonder and relished in the heart, shining with goodness, such is known as rasa. So it's unimaginable. And that's waiting for all of us. That's waiting for all of us. And it's not waiting after karma, jnana, and yoga, all these hard processes. It's waiting for us after just chanting and dancing, taking prasadam, associating with the devotees, hearing Krishna's pastimes. Very easy things, very easy and enjoyable things. And such a great thing that's beyond imagination is available to us. So we shouldn't miss the opportunity to experience these things. That's ultimately what we're endeavoring for in Krishna consciousness, to experience this type of relationships with Krishna. And they're not far off, particularly in this Kali Yuga, where Lord Chaitanya has descended, because he's come to give this specifically. Now, if we want to try to understand who is God, one way we can understand him is that his will not be contravened. You can't, if God wants something, he's so powerful and we're so weak that there's no way that what he wants is not going to happen. And what he wants now through his appearance as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is for us to experience this higher state, these higher stages of bhakti in relationship to him. That's what he wants. He's come and he's broken open the storehouse of love of God and plundered his contents. Talking about trying to understand these words and get into a deeper understanding of them and relish them a bit. What does it mean that he came and he broke open the storehouse of love of Godhead? Can you imagine a group of thieves come and they break open something? They're not kidding around. You know, they come in, they blow up the door, you know, and then they rush in and they plunder the contents. This is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did with his associates. He came in and he plundered the place. That means, and he gave it out freely to us. And what is he giving us out? He's giving out this which is beyond imagination, which is heavy with wonder and relished in the heart shining with goodness. He's given it to us. And in doing so, he didn't make a distinction between who's fit and who's not fit to receive it. Obviously, at least I can speak for myself, I'm not fit to receive it. I'm not fit to but he didn't care. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't care whether you're fit or not fit. He's giving it freely. Don't miss the opportunity. Don't miss the opportunity. Because we may be in this material world for a long time where we don't get a similar opportunity. Sunday's Gaur Purnima. That's what we celebrate on Gaur Purnima. The fact that he came and he gave us this opportunity. So don't miss it. And I'm speaking to myself here, not necessarily to you. So, are there any comments or questions about these things? Yes.
I've always wondered about relationships with Krishna. I don't know if the microphone, by the way. Relationships with Krishna.
It doesn't seem very appealing to be in Vrindavan as a blade of grass or a tree or an animal. And sometimes also I wonder, are all of us that are still left here, are we all the grass? Or so I was just wondering about that.
Well, there's enough room. There's enough room in the spiritual world for all of us. And we don't have to, there's only grass positions open. No. everything is open. That's what plundering the storehouse of love of God means. You know, whatever relationship you want to have with Krishna, you can have. Now, how we develop our relationship with Krishna, what that relationship is, will be revealed to us through the process of practicing Krishna consciousness, chanting Hare Krishna, hearing about Krishna. As we hear about Krishna, then we develop a particular type of an attraction based on what we hear. Oh, maybe I would like to be a blade of grass or something in neutrality. But all the relationships in the spiritual world are completely satisfying. We should try to understand that as a basis. So then why does someone have a relationship of neutrality like the grass or the trees or animals? And why does somebody have a relationship like Mother Yasoda? Well, that's based on their individual relationship with Krishna. their eternal and intimate individual relationship with Krishna. So they're not dissatisfied by having such a relationship. But for our understanding, the acharyas have put gradations on the different types of relationships, and basically each relationship with Krishna has certain qualities. And as we go through them, the so-called higher ones have the qualities of the lower ones. And so, like, the conjugal relationship with Krishna has all the elements of the other relationships. That's why it's sort of considered highest, the highest type of relationship. And the parental one has all of them except what's in the conjugal one, and on so on throughout all of them. But again, I want to stress that it's not that people are dissatisfied, but for our understanding, you know, these gradations are there. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's so merciful that it says, Rupa Goswami says, Namo Mahavanandaya Krishna Prema Padayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gora Tivise Namaha. That Rupa Goswami noted in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he's come to give the highest relationship, the conjugal relationship, which has never been given before. So it's particularly special that we're particularly fortunate to be in a situation where that conjugal mood, which is judged by the acharyas to contain all the essence of all the different relationships, that is being made available to us by the process of chanting Hare Krishna and following the teachings of our acharyas. So we can have that if we want it. We can have that relationship if we want it. We just have to follow the teachings given to us in our Guru Parampara. So that can be available to us. Is that answer? Anything else? Yes. Yes, so. All right. Well, again, the idea is, as I explained in the class, sometimes how we perceive Krishna, we perceive him to be a certain way. And so the fact that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't allow people into the kirtans, which were taking place at the house of Srivastakur, was because those people regarded Krishna, regarded their kirtans in a certain way. And it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita how certain envious persons wanted to get in, but they weren't let in. And then they showed what they thought was going on in there. Someone put some worship paraphernalia for worshiping Durga and things like that in front of the door, you know, because they wanted to discredit what was going on in there. And so there are persons who... there was also another devotee, a brahmachari, Suklambar Brahmachari. He was so austere, he only drank milk his whole life and everything like that. But he wanted to see Lord Chaitanya dancing. But when he came in, and he was hidden, because he wasn't part of the regular crew, so he had to hide just so he could see from a hidden place. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu detected that he's there, and he said, I'm not feeling the ecstasy. Because someone's here who's not supposed to be here. And then they found out that Brahmachari was there, and they threw him out. But that Brahmachari, his attitude was such, when he was thrown out, he was so appreciative of what he saw the Lord dancing, that the Lord realized that his attitude has changed by the mercy of seeing him dance. And so he was allowed back in. So it depends on our attitude. And that's us, not the Lord's restriction. It's our own attitudes which have to change. It's not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu restricting. Because after that, subsequent to this time, when the devotees were being persecuted, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took it to the streets. Then he took his sankirtan to the streets, his chanting and dancing in the street to everyone. And so it's not that he forever forbade and hid the chanting and people couldn't attend. But they were restricted based on their mentality, not the Lord's restricting them. And ultimately, the Lord took his sankirtan to the streets where everybody could experience chanting. Undoubtedly. But yeah, you taste it, then you distribute. So, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.